Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Good Bad Billionaire from the BBC World Service.
The podcast exploring the minds, the motives and the money of some of the world's richest individuals.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, we hear from Bangladeshis, both at home and abroad, about the recent unrest and its profound effect on their lives. In a country familiar with street protests, Bangladesh has been witnessing some of its worst scenes in living memory. We hear from those caught up in the violence and speak to family members watching anxiously from overseas, one of whom lost an uncle who was shot dead as he went to his mosque to pray.
I couldn't do anything. I couldn't attend the funeral. I just kept asking myself, how can I help his family now? They need mental support and I can't even call them. There's no way to tell them that I'm sad here too.
The violence, which continues after around a month of unrest, is reported to have claimed more than 200 lives, mostly as a result of the police opening fire. It began, though, as peaceful protest against the government. It then turned violent as the police clashed with students. There were reports, videos, pictures of gunfire, tear gas, fires being lit on the streets, burnt and demolished vehicles abandoned. Students were demonstrating against a quota system, which meant that a third of government jobs were reserved for veterans and family of the 1971 War of Independence against Pakistan. And that matters because graduate unemployment is high in Bangladesh, and there have been calls for more available jobs to be awarded on merit, not quota. We brought together Nosheen and Tabildar. Not their real names. We wanted to protect them for their safety. They shared what it's like to live in the country at the moment.
We are still very scared to step out of the house because there are polices and militaries everywhere. They're raiding our houses. And yesterday, the next building of mine got raided. And they are checking our phones and everything. So me and my family haven't stepped out of the house for over a week now because we are scared.
Let's cross to Tabildar. What have the days been like for you?
I live in an area called Mirpur DUHS. So this is an area where primarily the inhabitants are all ex-military, and my dad being ex-military as well. So we had this notion that this area is completely safe for us. This is completely secure. However, during the 18th, I went out for my noon prayers, came out and I saw there was a huge crowd and I met someone I knew. I was talking to them when a tear shell landed like 10 feet across from us. We ran inside and the gates were all closed, so we had to go over the wall. When we were inside, we saw that a giant police truck had drifted in because the policeman who was driving the car, he abandoned it and ran away. Everyone else, they torched the car because no one wanted the police to come back and take it back. Due to the tear shell, I was crying a lot. My eyes were very red and burning. There was a big protest in front of the shopping mall here. The protest was pretty peaceful, apart from the car being wrecked. And the police couldn't come toward us necessarily because a lot of students were in front of the roads. But then since at 3:30, I saw that there were no collisions occurring. I came back home. And at 7:30, I went out again for my evening prayers. And I saw that the police had entered DUHS. I saw marks of blood on the street, and right as I was about to go near the mall again, I heard shootings. I saw another tear shell burst, and I ran away. And the next day, when I went down again, I saw pools of blood. Windows were broken. The mall has a side where the mall is entirely made of glass. That's completely shattered. It's still like that now. Ever since then, the army came, and now the army is guarding our gates. That doesn't make us feel any more secure, to be honest, because we don't know on which side they're on. And we've seen military officials on footage shooting at students. So we don't really know if we are actually safe here. And ever since then, there has been no internet. I've connected to Telegram through a VPN. There has been raids going on. So I constantly live in fear now. I'm constantly agitated, frustrated, and I cannot go to pray in my own mosque. Police cars come and park there from time to time. So like I don't feel secure going anywhere. And I am always haunted by the deaths of my fellow students, the deaths of innocent children, the deaths of one child who was killed on a construction building, just shot for no reason, a six-year-old kid who was shot on her roof, this one boy from my own university who was giving out water to Protestants, and above all, my brother Abu Said, he was shot when he wasn't even armed.
I have a relative living in the Bono Street area. He went out for his morning walk and he saw there was a man who is not even a student. He was just walking around the streets. Police just killed, shoot him on sight. And there was another man who was witnessing this from his window. As he was recording it, police shoot him too and he died on spot. So my relative has witnessed this himself. There is a police van right in front of my building. I can see three vans and there are police walking in front of my building. So none of us is getting out and we are not even going close to the window because there are news that they have shoot people through the window.
Tabildar, you were saying earlier that you know some of the people injured and killed.
I not necessarily know them. I do know people that have treated these students after they were shot. A lot of students who got shot with actual bullets. And basically, when the bullet hits a hard surface, it splinters. And my friend has treated someone who got hit by the splinters and a side of his face got paralyzed. Another accidentally swallowed some of the splinters as well. It's very brutal and they have no remorse. Yesterday, they arrested a bunch of people that just went out for groceries. Even in the area where I live in, which is supposed to be a secure military area, I cannot go out with the peace of mind that I won't get arrested.
Tabildar, you mentioned your family background. What have been your conversations with your family since the protests began?
Every day when I want to go out, I always have an argument with my mother. Please don't go out. They will take you. My father, he passed away quite recently, so she's even more scared that she will lose another family member. Sometimes I go downstairs when it's relatively quiet. I meet a senior alumni from my school and we talk about current events and how the protest is going. My relatives, one of them lives in Dhanmundi. They live on the 8th floor, but even they had tear shells reaching them and burning their eyes. I have a cousin in Bono Street who had their dish cut off, so they can't even get the news from their TV. My cousin, who lives in the opposite avenue from us, she also treated a bunch of injured students. The conversations are mostly comprised of stay safe, don't go out. And then some of my uncles tell me, delete your Facebook post.
Nosheen, on the days in which there was no internet, was there any other way of contacting friends and family?
No. Our phone network was even jammed. We couldn't communicate with people. And it was even tougher for us to communicate people who live abroad over phone because we couldn't hear anything. Our network was basically jammed during the blackout.
How do you stop your mind racing a little bit in those days when you don't know how people are?
We weren't able to eat, sleep properly. We didn't sleep for like 3 nights. Me and my family stayed up. We were looking out, watching the helicopters still in the sky in 2 a.m. and we were watching ambulances passing. We weren't able to eat. We couldn't go out. Our mental health was really in a bad state. We still don't feel safe. There is police outside my house already. Also, they have a rifle with them. They're wearing helmet and they have bulletproof jacket. I don't feel safe at all.
When you see police or security officers like that, do you just stay well clear? Do you ever try and address them saying we need to go to the shops?
I try to avoid them. I try to avoid eye contact because I know what they're going to do. They're going to ask me for my phone. They're going to check my phones. And I have lots of videos in my phone that if I let them see, they would arrest me without a warrant, of course, because they are taking people who aren't even involved in this protest.
Whenever I go out, I check my area. If I see police, I go back home.
I wonder, was there a single moment when communications returned and you suddenly realized, I've got the internet back? And if so, what was the first thing you did?
I got text messages from my friend that the internet has been restored. a little bit. So the first thing I did was I downloaded a VPN, which is what you use to hide your IP address. VPN helped me text people over certain apps, not the popular apps. They didn't work with a VPN at first, like Facebook or Instagram. Right now, the VPN works a bit. But the first thing I did was I reached out to everyone through analog texts that the internet has come back for a little bit. So download the VPN as fast as possible. I got in touch with my relatives if they're safe or not, because this is going on in every district.
I didn't realize until one of my relatives lives in abroad called me on a social media app. And then I received the call. The network was still jammed. I already had my VPN on, as I realized I need VPN as soon as the internet is restored. They were just checking up on me. And then after that call, I texted other relatives living other parts of the country and outside the country that we are safe and this is the situation here.
Tabilda, how long can you carry on living like this?
I'm already fed up. I don't think my sanity can take anymore. Yeah, yesterday I wanted to maybe go down and join the protest or whatever. I went down and it's all the same. Military trucks everywhere, police trucks everywhere. So I couldn't even cross my neighborhood. So I had to come back. I was supposed to start like an internet business. Now my business can't even start. I can't even publish the ads. So my income is completely off and I can't study. I can't sleep. I can't eat. For me, it's the last straw. I cannot continue living like this at all.
When's the last time you ate properly?
Honestly, I can't remember. Whatever I'm eating, it just tastes bland. Whenever I'm sleeping, sometimes I get startled awake because I'm paranoid that someone's knocking on my door. And since my younger sister's a student, I'm even more paranoid. Sometimes when the curfew is off, we can just go out for grocery shopping, where I always accompany my mom to the shops now.
You've mentioned your sister, and I don't want to put her privacy at risk, but are you able to describe how she is?
The same as I am, but since she's younger, there are times when she gets more agitated than I am. My sister's doing her master's now, and since she can't go to the campus anymore, she can't work on her thesis, and like it's just upsetting to her a lot.
How do you reassure her?
There is no reassurance, because what can I tell her that I believe myself? I just tell her that things will be all right. It's fine.
Do you believe that yourself?
I don't know how to answer that. Maybe. I don't know.
Nosheen, what do you say to your family?
Well, I have a brother who is a student and he goes to Brack University, which is now very famous for these in this situation. I have no words to assure him that everything will be fine, because I myself do not believe that things will be fine anytime soon. And I myself am very frustrated that I have no words to say something positive to my family. I'm getting nightmares. I'm always in this fear that there might be a knock in my door and they might get my brother, who has done completely nothing, who is innocent, who hasn't stepped out of the house ever since this protest has started, but they still might get him. So me and my family, we all are in this complete terror and frustration.
Two people in Bangladesh who we're calling Nosheen and Tabildar. And just to add that Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, who was elected to a fifth term of office in January, has asked for help from the United Nations to investigate the violence following the protests. At the same time, the country's Supreme Court has reduced the quota system so that only about 5% of jobs will now go to veterans and their families. I'm James Reynolds. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service.
I'm Krassi Twig from the Global Jigsaw podcast, where we are asking, why are the Taliban fixated on women? 3 years after the group took the capital, Kabul, women in Afghanistan have been erased from public life. Some UN officials wanted to be recognized as gender apartheid, but the international community is divided and lacking in leverage. The Global Jigsaw looks at the world through the lens of its media. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Nosheen spoke in our previous conversation about issues around communication, being able to contact people, including relatives, waiting anxiously abroad. We heard about internet blackouts, although I should say in recent days, people have slowly been able to get back online. For our next conversation, then, we reached out to Bangladeshis living abroad. Hassan's in Germany, Anika's in Australia, and Anamika is right here in the UK. They all have family members back home. Before we start, I should warn you that you may find some of what they have to say upsetting. Anamika began by explaining how she kept in touch with her younger sister, who's a student.
The day they started their lockdown, she somehow managed to come home, but I was not aware about that. And we got like loads of stories, loads of videos in my timeline. And at the moment, I was not unable to contact with my sister. I mean, I have just only one sibling, and it was totally a nightmare for me. I was like totally distraught from my work, my research and everything. It was totally terrible.
Anika, in Australia, most of your immediate family is in Bangladesh. How are they?
They're still in panic. My brother, he's studying in Dhaka, and I was in constant fear that he's going to be taken. So the police is basically seizing every student's phones in doubt that they have evidence of the killings that have been going on by the police. My uncle got shot from a helicopter by a bullet, and he didn't even have anything to do with the protest. And it was a total shutdown of the internet. Like, there was no way to get any news out of Bangladesh at that time. It was like that for about 6 days. I was in constant panic. I couldn't reach out anyone. When my uncle died, it was 3 in the morning. One of my cousin brother, he lives in the US, he got the news first. He called me and he was telling me that my uncle got shot in the head. And I, when I heard it, I was like, Are you being serious right now? And he was like, yes, he got shot in the head and he died. And first of all, I couldn't take the news. I couldn't believe it because, like, he was young, in his 40s. He has a son and 2 daughters. They're very young as well. So I couldn't take the news first. I couldn't believe it that it actually happened. Then to verify, I reached my family out and I couldn't reach them. Whatever I could make from what my mother said over international call, where I couldn't mostly understand her words, she said that he was just passing by. He was going to the mosque to say his prayers. And the helicopters, police helicopters, were patrolling all over Dhaka city that day. I got some really graphic videos about how his body was lying on the streets. There was blood all over the street. And he had his daughter with him. His daughter is about 14 years of age. And his daughter was terrified, but I don't know how brave she could be that day. She called in a rickshaw and carried her dead father's body. And she was still hoping that she could save him. She couldn't take her to a hospital. She could take her to a neighbor. Then with the help of that neighbor, they finally took him to the hospital and the doctor decided that he was dead. And she described the experience as when they were carrying the dead body, they were afraid that what if this dead body gets stolen, because the police and the Chhatra League people, they were stealing dead bodies from everywhere to hide all the evidences, hide everything that they were doing so that the world never knows what's really happening in Bangladesh. It was extremely traumatic for me.
What is it like for you being outside the country?
I couldn't do anything. I couldn't attend the funeral. It was my mom's brother. She couldn't even see his dead body before he was buried. And I just felt like I just kept asking myself, how can I help his family now? They don't really need money, but they need mental support. And I can't even call them. There's no way to call them. There's no way to tell them that I'm sad here too. And I live abroad. I'm studying in a university. I have to pay my bills and all. I cry every night. I can't put myself to sleep. And then I wake up in the morning. I have to go to work the next morning. It was horrible for me. It still is, to be honest.
So sorry for you. It's really a sad story. There have like 1,000 stories like this. The best we can do, like creating awareness in our social media platform, so the world can know what's going on in Bangladesh, because there have no law and order, there have no media, no one is supporting any student or any family inside Bangladesh. I really appreciate BBC for this conversation.
I'm
really looking forward to see Anika's story, Hassan's story, and all of the international student story, so we can create awareness.
In Germany, in July, we have to attend a lot of exams. So I was preparing for all those things. Before 15, I didn't even know about these movements because I don't use social media that much. And suddenly, I was talking with my parents or with my family, and they just share me that, okay, something is happening. And I didn't care because this is happening for like,
yeah,
I would
these
say
are like
last,
very common
last 5 or 6 years.
Got used to it.
Yeah. Then I opened my Facebook accounts and all those things. Then I have some videos I was watching and I couldn't sleep at night. And in our university, there is a survey that if you are not psychologically fit, then you can go to a psychologist. And I talk with her. And when I was describing everything, she was crying. And I was really surprised that what is happening in a democrat country, in Bangladesh. I try my best to communicate with my parents every day. But last 10 days, I am able to talk with my parents only 2 times. Then when I was talking with my younger brother, he told me this, that bhaiya, this thing is happening. I have heard that police are raiding their houses because, you know, in Dhaka, some students, they stay together in a same house. So they mark it. Firstly, they knocked. And if there isn't any response, then they write down that suspected. Then police came and raid. And then if they got any evidence, then arrest everyone. And if they didn't got anything, then they cut down the internet connection. This is happening and my family is completely traumatized. My mother was crying. She didn't know that what she should do now. And the communication system is completely collapsed in Bangladesh.
You're all outside the country. When do you think you might have the chance to go back? Or is that simply something which is too difficult to think of or too dangerous?
Being very honest, I don't think so because I speak up on social media. I already got some threat.
Some unknown people,
they didn't message because they don't want to give some proofs, but they called me and they said that if you come to Bangladesh, I will kill you.
My parents are so scared about me. So they are just continuously forcing me, don't post anything on your social media platform. Please don't do this because you have a sister over here. So if you do something from abroad, it could make an impact for you. But, you know, being abroad, we already sacrificed a lot for our families and our future, but not being able to talk with our family, then see such a painful situation going on, it's very difficult for a normal human to focus their job or their study. It's like life has no value in Bangladesh now, and it's for the media to help us make. If our voice reach around the world, so there can be a positive change and impact, we could be make like little bit different.
It's really not safe to go back in Bangladesh, even to visit family. And what's worse is that the Bangladeshi media, the television channels, they make it look like everything's okay. Everything's peaceful, calm and quiet. A lot of people from Bangladesh are actually living at different parts of the world. If we don't raise our voice, nobody else is going to because nobody else is honestly able to. My mom was terrified when I was posting about my uncle's death. Like her brother died and she's telling me, remove the post. Like what if something happens to your dad? What if people from the government comes to our house and drags your dad out of home? What are you going to do? I'm like, the worst that could happen has already happened. We have to raise our voice now.
Bangladeshi's Anika in Australia, Hassan in Germany, and Anamika here in the UK on the immense difficulty of distance from the people they love the most. And we've heard claims in today's edition about disproportionate actions by security agencies. Well, in response, both police and government voices in Bangladesh have said in recent days that officers fired only in self-defense or to stop attacks on government buildings. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hol dir jetzt das gratis Mac-Menü-Upgrade in der McDonald's-App und mach aus deinem Big Mac einen Double Big Mac oder Big Mac Bacon TS. Nur für registrierte App-User in teilnehmenden Restaurants, nicht zu Mac-Menüs Mall.
I'm Krassi Twig from the Global Jigsaw Podcast, where we are asking, why are the Taliban fixated on women? 3 years after the group took the capital, Kabul, women in Afghanistan have been erased from public life. Some UN officials wanted to be recognized as gender apartheid, but the international community is divided and lacking in leverage. The Global Jigsaw looks at the world through the lens of its media. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.